This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power, and welcome to the Q interview from CBC Podcasts and from Q on CBC Radio 1. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks a lot for streaming or downloading or however you get this. Today on the show, you're going to hear my conversation with the comedian and actor Ben Schwartz, who is a very busy dude. So we're talking to him because he stars in the new murder mystery, The After Party, which is on Apple TV Plus. But he's doing a lot of other stuff. So he's in the comedy Space Force with Steve Carell. He's currently filming this movie called Renfield, which is this Dracula movie starring Nicolas Cage as Dracula. He was Jean Ralphio in Parks and Recreation. He was Sonic the Hedgehog in the Sonic the Hedgehog movies. So you might think that this conversation is Ben Schwartz and I going through role by role and chatting about each one in a very serious and diligent way. Ben Schwartz is also one of the best improv comedians in North America, so it's kind of hard to hold on to him in an interview. It's kind of hard to keep him on track, but in the best possible way. And I've learned in the 6 years I've been doing this job now that when it comes to Ben Schwartz, you say, hi, how are you? You bring up the movie and you see what happens. It's a great joy to talk to Ben. It's not just hilarious to talk to Ben, but it's also poignant. He has a lot of beautiful things to say about some of his early struggles in comedy, about people who have meant a lot to him over the years. And there were parts of this interview I was quite moved as well. I hope you get a kick out of it. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast, rate and review, especially if you like it. Here is my conversation with Ben Schwartz. How are you?
I'm doing very well. TP, people call you, right?
Well, now they can.
Oh, right, of course. TP or Topo.
T-Pain.
Oh, T-Pain, a lot of people are calling you. I forget. T-Pain, famous Canadian legend T-Pain.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, when Bush, you know the band Bush?
Of course. Come on, what are we talking about, Glycerine?
Yeah, so when Bush came out in Canada, there was already a band called Bush. So Bush in Canada were known as Bush X. That's a true story.
I mean, I apologize. Is there another version of that where there's a Canadian band that already exists?
Well, T-Pain. I'm Canadian T-Pain. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys had the Rolling Stones for a while, right? It was one letter away from the Rolling Stones. You're like, Rolling Stones, we got the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
They're really good.
It was the Beatles spelled the normal way.
Yeah, two E's. Two E's. There's Beatles all over the place in Canada. And near Toronto, are you kidding me? Come on.
Nicolas Cage, can you tell me anything about Nicolas Cage playing Dracula?
This is what I can tell. First of all, I'm not allowed to say much, so I'm tiptoeing around broken. The things we're going to talk about today, I have to be so careful for, because one's a murder mystery that I'm not allowed to reveal who the person is, and the other one is like a movie that's filming right now. But Nick Cage plays Dracula, which has been announced. I got to meet him once at the Tabor Reed in New Orleans. It is everything I hoped it could be, and I'm very excited to do scenes with him. That's coming up in a couple weeks. But I have done a whole bunch of scenes with Nicholas Hoult and Awkwafina, and it has been so fun. And Chris McKay's the director. Ooh, for someone like yourself, Ryan Ridley is the writer, who is a Rick and Morty writer for 3 seasons of Rick and Morty, which is a show that I loved. And then Robert Kirkman came up with the idea, who, you know, Invincible, the graphic novel and the television show, The Walking Dead. So the pedigree on this thing is Banana Town, I think is what we say, Topo. And it's been awesome. It's been a lot of stuff I don't get to do normally in movies, I get to do in this one.
Banana Town, by the way, in southern Manitoba.
There it is. It's incredible.
A lot of people don't know.
A lot of people don't know about Banana Town, but we're going to tell them right now.
Was 2021 particularly busy for you? Because it feels like there's a lot going on.
It's crazy. Much to the chagrin of the people who represent me, I've had probably the two biggest years of my career during a pandemic when I can't go out and tell, like, I can't. I remember when we did, like, last year it was Sonic came out, a Billy Crystal movie came out, Middleditch and Schwartz came out, and Space Force came out, and then there was a pandemic. So oftentimes when it comes to this industry, which can sometimes be fun and sometimes be terrible, it's like you're supposed to work off of, like, the heat of your previous projects. But then, like, they're like, okay, all these great things happened, and then the pandemic happened, so nobody filmed for 9 months. So like, and then I was like, all right, we'll figure it out. We're all having fun. So I got lucky and we're having one more of these moments now. It's a very surreal thing. It's a very surreal thing that I don't take for granted. And I'm always like, you know, there's part of the back of my brain that's like, oh, I don't know how long this is going to last, but this feels pretty cool right now. So right now, it's I feel very lucky.
Aren't you tired?
Ben, I'm Ben. Exhausted. I am, no joke, I am exhausted. And I'm writing. I sold a couple things. So I'm like, I have writing deadlines on my off days. So it has been exhausting, but also very gratifying. Like After Party's coming out, and we filmed that in October to February of 2020. And I think it's so good. Chris Miller is such a genius. Lord and Miller are like icons to me. So I'm very proud of the stuff that's coming out. But I'm exhausted. But this is fun. You and I get along great. So this is not like this is a fun part. This is stuff I get to look forward to.
Yeah, this is fun for me too. My favorite part was when I said, I was trying to figure out what I was going to say. And I was like, you are Ben. I'm Ben.
Yeah,
that's me.
That's me.
That's me.
You know me. I'm Ben.
What keeps you going when you get tired?
Your pauses are unbelievable. What keeps you going when?
Well, I suppose I'm trying to.
A lot
think.
Of people talk about you as the Tom Power is the Christopher Walken of Canadian radio.
What
a lot of people are calling you that.
What keeps you tired when you're?
I can tell you on set what I do. So I don't drink caffeine. I don't drink coffee. So I do a lot of voiceover. So I drink Throat Coat tea sometimes because my vocal cords are just absolutely trashed. After I started doing VO work in 2007 and kept getting roles for like young energetic kids, so like, oh no, so my voice has to be so much high octave wise. But when I'm on set and I'm really tired, the gift of not drinking coffee is that when I have a green tea, I am fucking jacked.
Really?
I am so energetic. And then like, so I'll have a green tea, and then if I can have a snack, I'll have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I sound like a child.
Rock and roll.
It's like,
this is the most rock and roll story. This is like Chevy Chase in 78 on SNL. That's what this is right now.
Oh, when me and Chevy wrote Fletch, we throw a pound of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on the table and snorted it up our noses. Yeah, but that's what I do. The gift of not drinking a lot of caffeine is when I do drink it, it gets me going for a little bit, and then I crash pretty quickly. But rest, I've learned from the older I'm getting. I'm 40 now. The older I'm getting, rest is enormous. I don't get sick as much now because I would go, and then on the weekends go, and then I would just be out of gas and get sick immediately. And now I'm learning that I need to rest. I need to try to get, you know, how many hours of sleep do you get in that time?
I'm trying to get that up. I was somewhere in like the six mode for a while, and
that's me.
And I'm trying to get that to like 7.5 if I can.
It's so hard when your body's used to six for, you know, however old we are.
Yeah, I read this book called, I think it's called like Why We Sleep or something like that.
And why do we sleep?
Well, that's a good question. I didn't make it to that part.
I only read the cover.
I didn't make it to that part of the book. What I did take from the book, let's be honest, someone read it to me. What I decided to do was stop drinking coffee after 12.
Did it work?
Because I learned that caffeine stays in your system for 12 hours. And it did work. It did work. And I also started meditating during the pandemic, which really, really helped.
Oh, I heard it's amazing.
Yeah, most life-changing thing I've ever done in my life.
Really? How many minutes a day do you meditate for?
20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes at night.
And so you're at a place where you're not thinking about anything, or do you have a word cycling through your head over and over again?
I'm in a place where I'm focusing on my breath and my breath alone.
Do you have a deviated septum where it's hard to breathe through your nose like I do?
No, I don't. I don't.
Yeah.
But
so
it's
hard.
But I am unhealthy, so I there's a lot of unnecessary whistling happening all the time. You know what I mean?
That's like, yeah, of course. I remember those like old, like Disney cartoons where like an old man is sleeping. It's like
there's like a lot of bubbles have, like, coming out of my mouth.
Yeah. Brr, 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 brr. Oh, how long can we do this for a while? Or are we only allowed to do like a something amount interview, or can this go over?
This is you. I mean, this is your people.
Okay. All right, we're great. Let's do it. This is fantastic. I wasn't sure if there's a limit that Canada can take with me.
No, there's a limit Canada can take with me. That's the
that's how it goes.
Well, I want to be cautious of, well, first I want to be cautious of my pauses now because I'm terrified, but I want to be cautious of not giving too much away about the after party because you said,
yes.
Can I leave it up to you? Can you tell me a little bit about it
And, I can be the pro, but also you got to tell me if this is your way of admitting that you haven't seen anything, so you're trying to make me
I
talk about
it. I have seen.
Okay, great.
I watched the first episode, and then I watched your character's episode.
So you watched 1 and 3.
That's right.
What do you like? You love music. What did you think of the third episode?
I'll get into it. I got a question about it. Go ahead.
This is the pitch for the show. So Chris Miller, Lorna Miller, who are two geniuses, produced this. Chris Miller had this movie idea about 10 years ago, and then he turned it into a limited series for Apple TV Plus, who I love. So this is kind of what it is. It's a murder mystery. So it's an after party for all of us. And it's a reunion, high school reunion for all of us. And then there's this big after party because a big pop star ended up going to our high school, right, played by Dave Franco. We go to his after party, and in this after party, someone dies. So it is a whodunit. Tiffany Haddish comes in as a detective, and it's a Rashomon style, which if people don't know what that means, basically Tiffany sits us down, each one of us per episode, and we explain what happened that night. So the first episode, Sam Richardson, this will show you how good the cast is, sits Sam Richardson in. But what's unique about this show and what makes Lorna Miller so genius is in his retelling of the events that happened that night, his character is kind of the romantic. So in his retelling, it's shown as a romantic comedy and lit as a romantic comedy. And the score is a romantic comedy. And all the actors in the show act as if they're in a romantic comedy. Second episode, Ike Barinholtz is like a Fast and the Furious action movie. So all of a sudden, the night's events are told through an action movie. And then you have Mine, which is a big budget musical. And then you have Alana Glazer's, which is a thriller. And then you have Jamie Dimitriou, who's a genius. If you've never seen Staff Let's Flats from the UK, which is a genius show. And his is told like a high school movie. So it's all done through that. And there are little clues throughout. And there are puzzles within each episode in the background that Chris put in there. So you can like kind of figure out stuff. So it's like this beautiful comedy, but you could really try to figure out who done it. And there's 8 episodes, and the 8th one is airing this Thursday, which is very sad for me because I'm so proud to be a part of the show that it's like, I'm sad that it's over, if that makes sense.
Why, what is it about the show? Like, I understand you love the platform, and I understand you love the writers and all that, and you love the format, but like as an actor in it, what did you love about it?
It was, first of all, I'd never been directed by Chris before. I mean, I had a tiny role. I played a character called Banarnar in Lego Movie 2. I know you know that, Tom. I don't have to explain that to you.
Can you see the poster behind me? It's there.
Yeah, I can. It's a Banarnar, and then there's a big Q there. I understand. And you said that piano was given to you by Banarnar.
yeah, it's a Banarnar brand piano.
It's a Banarnar piano. Yeah. So I was very excited because I love their stuff. I think Spider-Man, the Spider-Verse is like a top 10 movie of the past, 10 years. I loved that movie, and I love their Jump Street films, and they give you room to breathe. They make you feel like it's a collaborative effort when you're being directed by Chris, who directed all the episodes, which is very rare in television. I've done a lot of television. Oftentimes you're directed by 100 different people. So it's like, it's just, it felt like you're a part of it, and you're right. The writing is so good. The cast is amazing. And the cherry on top of all of it is it happened during the height of the pandemic. So it was October 2020 before vaccines existed. I hadn't touched a human being. I hugged a human being outside of my girlfriend who lived with me it must have been a year. So we get to set, we all get tested twice a day. And I have scenes where I get to embrace Sam Richardson because he's my best friend in the show. And it was such a weirdly emotional feeling to have no contact or connection with people for so long. And then you're there, all of us finally have masks off, we're hugging, we're, talking to each other. So it was that, and then the election happened. So it was a very emotional piece to begin with. And it was everybody's first thing back, and everybody was so cognizant about how lucky we were to be working because we hadn't worked in a while. So it was all those things wrapped up into one. But then Chris Miller is the captain, is just, I will do anything with him for the rest of time. I hope he enjoyed working with me enough where he puts me in something else because he is a true collaborator and an incredible director. Gets incredible performances out of everybody. Sorry, that's a long answer, Tom.
No, it's the right answer. Can I play a clip from the show?
Oh, yeah. I love when you play audio clips and then we have to explain what's really happening.
Hit it. What about those of us who missed our shot? Didn't rise to the top. Never became the cream and we just remained the crop. I've heard it said before that we get one shot in life. And even though that may be true, it's not exactly right. Because here's the secret. Even though we get one shot in life, we all get that one shot. Twice. It's my guest Ben Schwartz singing in the after party, speaking to T-Pain. Tell me,
oh my God.
Tell me what we just heard.
Wait, can I tell you something, Tom?
Yeah.
Because this is something I find very interesting. When you're on Zoom and you have to listen or hear somebody. So Tom did something that I love, which the second he played, he looked down. He didn't look at me anymore because it's so awkward to like, if I'm singing in something and you're just staring at me like this, I also feel awkward staring at you. I'm embarrassed that there's my voice there.
It's a weird, I do. You know what? If you were here, if you were like over there at that chair, which you would guess be normally in
you would
these
look
times,
away and smile or something.
I'd stare down. I'd stare down. Like, I don't know. I don't know what to do in those moments. I don't expect you to know what to do with those
it's
moments.
It's so awkward.
I tell you the worst of it is, and the worst of it is when you have like a famous musician on.
Yeah.
And you play
singing a song
or their first hit and they're like, they're here to talk about album 83 and you're like, well, here's Carry On My Wayward Son. And you just bury your head.
My God, what a great song, by the way. You're having incredible people on the show.
Yeah. What's you and Journey? That's it. Or is that Journey?
This is basically it. Yeah. Carry On My Way. I'll give it to you.
Kansas is Kansas. Thank you, Sam.
Kansas is right.
Tell us what we heard in the clip.
So what you heard is, so my episode, I love music, so mine is told like a big musical. So we have, we have John, who's a Canadian. John wrote the songs. John, tell me the Canadian, L-A-J-O-I-E, the famous Canadian comedian.
Lajoie?
Yeah. Is that how I always pronounce it incorrectly because I'm not elegant. He was in The League. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Oh, I'll look it up.
Oh, you're a maniac. Do you know who Don Lake is? Do you not know your legends?
No.
Don Lake is a Canadian legend. Tom, you own the airwaves. You must know these Canadian legends.
I lease. John Lajoie. No, I don't know, but he's a Canadian comedian, actor, rapper, singer, and musician, and internet celebrity from Montreal.
He's incredible. And I shot a movie in Montreal. I love Montreal. By the way, I've been to Vancouver. I've spent so much time in Canada. I really feel close to Canada. I feel very comfortable anytime I come to Canada now. I don't know why. I also understand that instead of you guys going, you go,
What? Hold on. Small what do we do?
Mm-hmm. So we go, you go, You go up over a hill for your So anyway, John wrote the lyrics with Chris Miller and the gentleman who wrote my episode, Jack. And the there's three songs I get to sing, and I really get to sing them. I had a vocal coach called Fiora Cutler. I had a choreographer called Kat Burns, who's a genius and worked on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And so I had to like sing and dance. And one of the songs is with Sam Richardson, which you just heard, and Jamie Dimitriou, the other two. So one's a rap song, kind of like Hamilton, because there's different what Chris told me is like, when we say a musical, there's also 100 different types of musicals. So we wanted to kind of, show all of it. So it's like, there's a Hamilton one, there's like a School of Rock type musical. And then third one is like the indie rocker crying into his guitar type song. And so when he asked me if I do the show, I said, oh my God, this sounds so fun. I'd love to. And then a week later he goes, oh, can you sing? And I was like, you already gave me the role. What happens if I said no? What would we have done? He's like, I figured you'd be a good singer. I was like, I mean, I'll be fine. I'll be fine. I'll be good enough, I think. But I'm not, getting on stage and singing like Leslie Odom Jr. So that was it. So what we heard was a rap song from my episode 3, which I'm very excited that it's finally out.
How did you find the musical part of it?
I found it to be, when he told me, I was so excited and then really nervous. Because in like cartoons, I sing, but I'm like, it's like as a voice of like Dewey Duck. So it's not real. And this one.
And in improv, there's often singing, but there's sort of a lower bar for the singing.
That's
that
exactly
happens
right.
In
We're
it,
making
right?
up on the spot. And also with John Ralphio, one of the bits end up being me singing sing-songy things. So it's like I have a bunch of, but never like, hey, this is a song. Learn these lyrics. Learn where to take your breaths, which was a new thing I never thought of. Like, you need to have enough breath to finish these bars of this rap song. So take your breath here and here. You only have a half second here. But the good thing was I felt protected because we recorded beforehand, because you have to have a full track for the dancers to have their exact beats and everybody have their own beats, and know exactly what to do. So I recorded it beforehand. And while I'm recording it, I can get three shots at once, one line. So if I do it and they're like, okay, I'll pick up this, maybe let's put up here, let's change this word. So we got to play with it in the room, which is great. So if I had to do it live, it would have been so nerve-wracking. But doing it that way, then doing one and it being successful, then I was like, okay, let's do the other two. And it was great.
More of my conversation with Ben Schwartz coming up right after this. Hope you enjoyed that ad or PSA or service announcement. Here's more of my conversation with Ben Schwartz. It's a weird path, isn't it? Like, I was just thinking about this. Last time you came on, we were talking about improv, and you were, I remember we had a really lovely chat, actually, when you were telling me about the idea.
Well, you're like, an improviser, aren't you?
No, but I
thought you had, like, an improv background, or you, like, love improv, or something like that.
No, when I was in grade 8, I was in my junior high improv team. I think I'm from a part of Canada where you have to be quick all the time or you'll get killed. So,
right.
So maybe that's more like it is. But anyway, I remember we were talking to me about, oh no, I know what it was. I told you that when I came here, I made friends with a bunch of people who were in improv and that they were all so kind and welcoming. And you told me how being kind and welcoming is sort of what you have to do in improv, because that's sort of the yes of the social yes, as opposed to the onstage yes.
I think that makes it be a whole idea is you're supposed to, a good improviser will take anybody's idea and add to it and never say no to it and build something together. A bad improviser or an improviser that's not as skilled or hasn't put enough time in yet will try to steal scenes with jokes and take away from whatever the other person is doing. The whole idea is, lift each other up and make a great scene.
And that lends itself well to being kind and I think warm and generous to people.
Why wouldn't you be kind? There's a line that someone said to me when I first got here that was like, first of all, I was an intern. I did the garbage at Upright Citizens Brigade to get free classes. You know what I mean? Like, I was a page at Letterman. So I've been on the lowest rung many, many times. I worked at a sneaker store before that. So it's like, I know what it's like to, help people and whatever. But it's like, someone said when I first got to Hollywood, and I apologize if we talked about this last time, was, because I'd be very nice to everybody's assistant, because an intern is basically even lower than that, which I've been that many times. And then, they said, yeah, you never know when that person might be the head of a studio, and that's why you should be nice to them. I was like, no, you should be nice to them because they're a human being and they're working hard for someone. And you know what I mean? It's like, I always thought that was I heard that so much when I first came to LA, and I hated that sentence. The idea of like, be nice because you never know. I was like, you're doing it wrong. That's not why. You'd be nice because how hard the world is, and just be nice to people. You never know how crappy that person's day is.
How does being an improv artist, like an improv comedian, lead to acting? Do you know what I mean? Like, you would think that they would be incongruent with one another. And I find it really interesting that so many improv comics go on to become actors.
That's so interesting, because to me, stand-up seems the harder transition, because stand-up is just one person on stage not interacting with anybody else. Improv is you're doing scene work, so you're doing plays. Like, I tour now. I'm doing a show called Ben Schwartz and Friends. We're playing the Beacon Theater in New York. I don't think we're coming in Toronto yet. But by the way, I do want to come to Canada again. But it's like, so we're doing scene work on a stage, just like someone in a play. And you work on being truthful in the moment. Because a lot of improv is, if you're being the height of your intelligence, don't treat the audience like they're stupid. You know what I mean? If you have a funny thing in your head, or you find a way to build a scene, you can find it. And I've also found the more I insert a little bit of drama into the improv where it's a realistic scene, the comedy hits harder. It's like, if you just hit them with joke, it's not as satisfying as like hitting back and forth, having a real moment with someone, and then you hit them with a joke and you start playing the game of the scene, is what we call it at Upright Citizens Brigade. So it was an easier transition for me, because you play 100 characters, you're learning how to kind of write on the fly, you're learning how to be in scenes with people, you're learning how to make your scene partner look good. So for me, it felt very natural. Stand-ups who are amazing and so talented, that is more them to the audience. So they're not having to do scene work as much. So that's why anytime those stand-ups crush, I'm always like, they're amazing. They can do anything. It's incredible.
When Jean Ralphio hit in Parks and Recreation.
Yeah. Let it be known that Tom is pretending like he's playing with a big beard right now, when he's just literally has a 5 o'clock shadow. But keep going.
I had a beard until yesterday. Maybe that's what it is.
That's what it is. Playing with your fake beard.
Maybe I like the way my bottom of my chin feels, because I'm not used to it. That's what
true.
It is. It's
like, oh. I'm doing for Renfield. I had to shave my arms for a reason, whatever, without getting into it. But so I never had to shave my arms before. And so,
By the way, we're on the radio. I should point out your arms are very, very smooth.
And I'm a Jewish man, so I usually have very hairy arms. And so right after they shaved it, I literally, at night, I'd just be like, it's like petting a cat for the first couple of days before I got used to it. You're like, what is going on? You're just watching TV and like, why am I petting my arm?
Well, that's
just
exactly what I'm doing. I'm just being like, look at this lovely skin.
It's gorgeous.
That I didn't know existed. I know. I look like out of shape Orson Welles.
Out no shape Orson Welles.
Yeah.
Can you imagine Orson Welles that's absolutely jacked? Can you imagine a Kumail Orson Welles? All right, tell me your John Ralphio question. I apologize.
I should set this
up. I like to bring the audio medium to life by explaining everything that's weird about the visual part of it.
You are. You're like Marshall McLuhan. How do I set this up? So John Ralphio, character on the NBC show Parks and Recreation.
That's right.
Was sort of a small role, sort of like a friend of one of the main characters. And that character sort of blows up, becomes massively successful, gets brought back into the show over and over and over again for a role that I'm guessing was not supposed to come back over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
How does that change things for you?
I think that role was... That was kind of like if I could go back in my career and, you know, before that, I've been performing at, you know, for comedy since 2002. I went to the Montreal Comedy Festival, you know, with my friends Adam Pally and Gil Ozeri, is one of the first sketch groups ever to play there for the Montreal Comedy Festival. And that was the one that all of a sudden hit with people and, you know, and then maybe they'd find my short films through something else that I made. But that was it. It changed. It kind of changed everything because all of a sudden people could point to me and say, oh, I know where that guy's from. I've seen that guy be funny before. Let's let him audition for our thing and see if he can be funny for us. Mm. But before that, I would have to force people to look at my short films or come to a show, which is a lot to ask oftentimes of someone in Hollywood. So it's like that one, people were watching, even though Parks and Rec got terrible ratings. Every year, Mike said that he wasn't sure he was going to come back. And oftentimes he would end the seasons on a way that he had no idea how he was going to fix it at the beginning of the next season.
This is Mike Schur, the guy. We had him on the show recently, the guy, one of the creators of Parks and Rec.
He's brilliant and kind, and the way that he came up to me. So I had, if you want to know the story, it's that I had a meeting with Katie Dippold, Harris Whittles, who has since passed but was an incredible writer, and Mike Schur. And they said, hey, we have this role in Parks. It's Leslie has a boyfriend who's a cop. And we're looking for people for it. And I sat down with him and he said, Mike said, I saw you do these interviews for ESPN, which I wrote and did. And he goes, and I thought that character was so funny. I just think there's like some way to pop you in here somewhere. And he goes, I think you're too young to be this character. But he said before I left, he goes, think about this, like The Simpsons. You know, we got to populate the world of Springfield. There's Milhouse over here. There's comic book guy. So he goes, you know, we'll keep you in mind as we're whatever. So I didn't get that role. That role went to Louis C.K. played that cop. But then later on, they said, I know my friends are auditioning for this role. So I don't know if it was immediately like written for me, but other people are auditioning and they go, oh, I mean, this story is even worse. The short version of the story is that, hey, we have this role. It's the best friend. It plays in like a scene or two. Do you want to do it? And I was like, of course. The long story, which I'll make short also, is somehow there was a mix up. And they offered me the role, and an assistant at the desk of my agency passed on it without telling me that I got offered the role. So imagine how different things would be. And so the only reason I found out about it is I was friends with one of the writers on Parks, and Katie calls me and goes, hey, just so you know, like you passed today, but just so you know, I just want to know why, because we love you and you're friends with us. And you said, and I was like, what are you talking about? Do whatever you want. I don't even know what the role is. I'll say yes now. She goes, oh, you literally passed today. I go, I have no idea what you're talking about. So I found out that an assistant by mistake passed on this role for me. Who knows what happened? So basically I get there, I do my scene, which is that scene at the beginning when my first intro where Aziz brings me in and he's like, you know, this is John Ralphio. And I go, swan song, what's up? And I do something. And then after the first take of rehearsal, Mike Schur comes up to me and he goes, you're coming back. And then he goes up to the writer's room and he writes me into the next few episodes coming up, and that turned into 21 episodes and turned into like a thing that people cared about. And it was like, I can't tell you how lucky I was that role allowed me to show my funny in a way that felt unique enough that people wanted me to do it again.
So does it change things? I heard this interview with Kieran Culkin recently where he talked about how his friend made a famous film, and he wouldn't say which film it was, but he said, The example he gave is that one night he went to a restaurant, had dinner with his wife. Everything was fine. They paid up and they went home. They went to sleep. They woke up the next morning. They went to that same restaurant for brunch. And that was the night the movie debuted. On the way there, he got stopped while he got interrupted while he was eating his dinner to take pictures. He was on
Within 24 hours, yeah. He became a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Did that happen with John Ralphio on Parks? No.
I'm a tiny character in a show that not a ton of people watch live. If it happened more when it hit Netflix or like near the end when people started rooting for my character and was like excited, and all of a sudden I was in like the finale and the penultimate episode. But I would get stopped. One of the best ones I got was early on. I've been doing it for a while now, but early on when I started doing John Ralphio, I was in Manhattan, and one of my favorite things, you know, I grew up in New York, and so one of my favorite things is putting on earphones, listening to music, and walking the streets. I didn't have any money when I lived in Manhattan, so I never took like cabs. So I'd take either a subway, and then I'd just walk everywhere. And that was like how I stayed in shape. Also in LA, I've like gained so much weight because you don't walk anywhere.
You can't.
So I was walking one day, earphones in, and I'll do my best to help this in a visual meeting, in an audio meeting. But a guy walks by, a business suit, definitely in the, you know, like one of those guys. And he snaps his fingers. He points at me and he goes, TV, and then keeps walking. That was my favorite one. Points, looks at me, TV, never stop stride. Never stop stride. It was a dream. It was a dream come true. And then I don't really go to bars that much anymore, but you know, like when you're younger, you go to bars and people would sing at me and pull me over to the side and tell me how much they love the character. And it became more pictures than before. But I mean, like I've also hung out with very famous people and it's nothing like that. Like people that can't go anywhere and they're stopped or everybody's nervous around them. And so I feel very lucky that the place that I'm in is like, it seems like cool people are like people who are nerdy like me kind of dig the stuff I do. And now their kids sometimes like me in cartoons and stuff. So it's like, it's a fun place. And then it's fun to play with the idea of if I play a lot of good guy characters to start playing bad, you know, meaner characters or something like that. It's fun to start playing with making sure I'm not doing John Ralphio over and over again.
Making sure you're not doing John Ralphio over and over again. Like there's a temptation when something works that well for people to want to cast you in the same role over and over again.
That's exactly correct. And I think that's something that Hollywood does quite a bit. We know he can do this.
Yeah.
And then also sometimes people will write a role with you in mind because they've seen you succeed already like that. So I will be, I did Parks and then I did House of Lies with Don Cheadle and Kristen Bell and Josh Lawson because that was me playing more evil and kind of an asshole character. And I wasn't the comedic, like, waka, waka, waka relief. And then, by the way, I played a couple of, like, was a star, a couple of indie movies where I had to, like, hold the ship up and I didn't get to be whatever. And then I couldn't wait to be, like, the comedic person again. So to play both is really fun.
But before we go,
Because you have a lot. You said you got to go grocery shopping. You said you have a lot to do today. And this is just getting in the way, you kept saying, Tom.
Yeah, I'm trying to get you misheard me. Trying to get this over with is what I was trying to
That's
say.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah,
trying to get this over with is what you kept saying. I keep seeing you look behind you, look at a clock throughout this whole thing.
Yeah, really. No, you couldn't see my watch. I'm pointing at my watch. I'm tapping on it as I'm talking to you. You know,
every time. I can hear it. You're probably changing it in editing. But
And I'm making the mouth hand movement. Like, oh, here we go. There's a lot of this happening here, you know?
A lot of blah, 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 blah.
Did the forced time off of the pandemic give you a new perspective on what you do?
In what sense?
Did you learn?
I hope that you have an answer for that as well that I can hear and play with.
Well, I didn't get any time off. But
you couldn't come to the studio anymore, so you had to figure it out from home, I guess?
We were here.
Briefly,
you're right. Last time I talked to you, I was home. Very briefly. You're right. It did. It made me more appreciative of what I do. But for you, I mean, the thing about your job is that it's one thing to the next and to the next and to the next and to the next. And if it's improv, it's improv show after improv show leading to audition after audition leading to this appearance,
That's right.
Listen to that. When you get off the treadmill, I can imagine it's kind of scary.
I think that's it. I think that's right. I think that's very astute. I think there's a couple things. One of the things also that I've done in my career is – and maybe this is helpful to someone listening, that you don't have any control in acting. I don't get to say, I want to be Spider-Man. So I'm going to go be Spider-Man in a Spider-Man movie right now. That would be my dream, of course. I'm a Jewish kid from the Bronx. Are you kidding me? Play Spider-Man would be, but it's like, I don't get to pick the TV shows or the movies. I audition for them or offers come in. And so I'm at the whim of whatever those things are. Writing, on the other hand, I have complete control over it. I could be writing anytime I want. And I started as a writer, you know, freelancing monologue jokes for SNL and Letterman. And like I started writing articles for places and, you know, I sold a bunch of TV shows and movies. So it's like I wrote almost, you know, I gave myself a couple weeks, but then I wrote like a lot because I can control that. So I made sure to be doing that. But I will say it gave me time to realize how nice it is to have time and have a routine. It makes me feel like that's lovely, spending more time with my girlfriend, spending more time. And by the way, connecting with my family over Zoom, finding ways to stay connected. And also you learn that you have relationships that you care about in your life, friendships that you have to be the one to reach out to people to make sure that they exist. I think especially as we get older, Tom, it's like they're people that I love and I care about and I don't hear them because they have their whole life and they're dealing with COVID and, you know, the whole situation. And I wanted to make sure that I felt connected to people still, but there was a sense of not having something to do for probably a couple months, which has been a while for me. And it was really interesting. And your version of meditation seems like something like that, where you're getting used to the idea of and getting comfortable with the idea of silence and being alone and being with yourself and caring, making sure you care about others. So it's like, I think it was very helpful for that. At the same time, I'm, you know, an anxious person. So feeling terrible for anybody that got hurt from this thing and worrying about my family and all that stuff. But there was a moment of when I had to press pause that felt like almost like, oh, I could sleep. I'm going to sleep for like a week. I'm going to sleep finally for like a week. And I'm going to make sure that we were so safe at where we live. We were so safe. We didn't really go out. We like wiped down stuff at the beginning. You know, we went as safe as possible. So there was it, but I think there was something with being forced to exactly what you said, being forced to like unplug and what that felt like. And it was really interesting and it makes me want to do it or leave time for that in my life moving forward to make sure that I'm not occupied so much by my job that that's not the way I justify what my life is going like and stuff like that. If that makes sense.
No, that's beautiful. Do you remember any of the monologue jokes you pitched? Like in my mind, you pitched something for like the Michael Phelps episode or something like that.
I got two jokes on Weekend Update and I got 21 jokes on Letterman. And they were... The SNL ones probably would not fly today. I don't, they're just like very, one of them's very dark. It's very dark about, it's just dark.
Okay.
And the Letterman ones are literally, it's funny. It's like stuff I wouldn't make fun of now, but it's like you learn how Letterman thinks. You look at the news articles. Okay. Paris Hilton got into an accident and she's fine. Okay. I can make fun of it. She's fine. She's already laughing about it. I know David Letterman is going to make fun of that because that's one of the subject matters. He's friends with her and he does that. So I'll try to write, I would write 15 jokes a day, every single day. I did this for years, 15 jokes a day. And then for any time I Weekend Update, 10 jokes on that Friday before Weekend Update or whatever it was, Thursday.
And you fax them, right? You fax them in?
So I had to buy a fax machine and then pay for a landline. So basically when I got paid $75 a joke that got on Letterman. And I got paid $100 a joke that got on Weekend Update. So I probably wrote for Weekend Update for 2 years, maybe more, and I only got two jokes on. So think about how terrible the time versus whatever. But for Letterman, basically what it paid for was it paid off my fax machine, it paid off my landline every month, and there was no money. It was just to learn how to write. I mean, everyday writing, you get so good at training yourself to be, you know, very diligent and stuff like that. And then also when it's time to improvise, my head is pretty quick now. And also like in terms of writing scripts, I've done so many punch ups for so many movies that maybe you've seen, you know, you don't get credit for it and you don't get paid much, but sometimes helping friends out, sometimes whatever. But so I think it's helped my career a little bit in that. But the Letterman ones are all like, also like I wrote about in my lifetime, I probably wrote 1,000. It's so hot outside that jokes.
You got
because
one?
No, I mean, they're in a book in my place in LA. I wish I had him.
Listen, always nice to talk to you.
I love it. It feels like we're friends, even though we've only talked to each other virtually twice.
Yeah, it feels like there's something percolating. Listen, always nice to talk to you.
This has been lovely, man. So nice to see you. And thank you very much for all the time and the thoughtful questions. I truly appreciate it.
Ben Schwartz is one of the stars of the murder mystery The After Party on Apple TV. He's also in Space Force on Netflix, and he is a joy to talk to. If you're wondering where our listener mail segment is, I tested positive for COVID about a week ago. So I'm in the clear, but I'm not feeling that it's time to have our good friend Caitlin in the studio with me at this point. So please send your listener mail into q@cbc.ca. That's q@cbc.ca, and I'll get right back to you. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and rate and review. We'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.